大致上我们就去跟你去那样，那进行做这个做嘛多，那刚才马丁必须去看还有马列这些，你去他们家呢？天津这个情况是，这刚来也没对比的，刚来没就让我们的这个没把印章，去跟那些呢，让我们的这个动画没做，让我们的这个没动笔去看，有嘛来去，我的这些，你把这个上级给你送过来，嘛这些是吧？这些呢，咱俺们这个，那就刚刚就，调调把它，你没对把印章，调出不过来，对吧？在乎我的第一张啊，这个，俺电梯给那么些上大钱都是的，那东岸这些山的，东岸跟那看的有木多，第三他跟那些山把，接把接上当，人家山这些他们这些跟那看的公路都山，那个电梯给上当的，那先这些，然后人家进七步银把当，那电梯给上通的先这样啊，这个，那就还没出兵这边，还没出兵上不接的。现在怎么讲？他们这那调调把那些东岸没调把那些死，其他怎么讲？他们这啦，那牛毛不忘记些，那东岸牛还在干嘛忙不停的吃牛，怎么讲？电梯上不来，停的好快的，那你怎么讲的呀？那讲把他们些公家，俺都现在啊这个啊，都先上当过来，先看上几个写出来写上。
Good morning. So last night we looked at how.All phenomena without exception do not exist inherently at all. Rather, everything that exists, all phenomena, are dependent arisings. And so they're dependent arisings, they are not inherently existent. Therefore, they are empty of inherent existence. And this relates to all phenomena without exception.So that's what we looked at last night, directly in the context of the verse. And thereafter, we looked at how we can use this understanding of dependent arising to achieve our innermost wish, the innermost wish that we share with all sentient beings of wanting to experience only happiness and to completely avoid and never experience any problems or difficulties at all. So,The accumulation, so the attainment of happiness, as well as the elimination of suffering, this comes about in dependence on causes and conditions, and in dependence on employing skillful techniques. So then last night we looked at in a little more detail at how we can use our understanding of dependent arising as a cause to develop the minds of love and the minds of compassion.We develop the mind of love by reflecting on how all our material good conditions, as well as all our inner good qualities, all our inner good qualities and our virtue, come about independence on other factors, independence on something. They are not inherently existent, and amongst the factors they are dependent on is others.Then we take this understanding and we develop it so that we can see the kindness of others. The kindness others show us directly and indirectly in this life and in previous lives. When we develop this appreciation for the kindness that others show and have shown us, this will lead to a natural arising of the wish to repay that kindness. May others be, and this wish to repay the kindness.That then we develop to the next stage of may all beings experience happiness. May this innermost wish of theirs to experience happiness, may this be fulfilled, may they achieve it. And this is the mind of love. So this is how we use the meditation on dependent arising to cultivate the mind of love. Moreover, all sentient beings like ourselves also want to be freed of suffering and problems.But they are tormented by the various afflicted minds. And it's due to these afflicted minds that they are suffering. And having already reflected on the kindness of others and given rise to the wish to repay that kindness, now that we see beings are suffering, we generate the wish, may all beings be freed of suffering. And that is the mind of compassion. So this is how we use the reflection on dependent arising to cultivate the mind of compassion.So that, in brief, is what we looked at last night. Stay then, we'll continue by looking at how one utilizes the presentation on dependent arising to overcome our own afflicted minds. That brings us to the 16th verse. Because inherent existence cannot be negated, if phenomena possessed even the slightest inherent nature, nirvana could not be achieved, nor fabrications eliminated, you taught.
So looking
at the first line, because inherent existence cannot be negated. Let's start then this morning by reminding ourselves of what is meant by this term inherent existence. How would a phenomenon exist if it had its own self-nature or its own inherent nature? Now, as we heard last night then, if something is self-existent or inherently existent, it means it is independent. Or to express that in another way, it means it's not dependent on anything. To express that in another way, it's not dependent on anything, for example, causes and conditions. So whatever is around this, or whatever this inherently existent object would encounter, those, because it is independent of whatever it encounters, they wouldn't have any impact on it at all. So therefore, it would be unchanging, the second quality, the first being independent, second, it's unchanging. And being unchanging means it can't improve. It doesn't decline, it doesn't develop, it can't change at all. So if something were to be self-existent or inherently existent, it would be independent and it would be unchanging. Again, then, the meaning of inherent existence is that the phenomenon would, if a phenomenon were inherently existent, it would not be dependent. Nothing else could have an impact on it because it is independent. And therefore, whatever causes and conditions it were to encounter, it wouldn't change. It would be, so that would be its second quality, unchanging. So let's take an illustration that we can very easily understand. if the color, let's say some paint, red paint, were inherently existent, whatever one were to do with that red paint, it couldn't change because it would be independent of anything it encountered. And therefore, if you took the red paint and poured in white paint and mixed it, it would stay red. But we all know that is not the case. Suddenly it goes to pink. So this shows that the red paint or the red color is not inherently existent, or to put it another way, it's not independent, because independence on a cause, the pouring of white paint, the mixing of white paint, it does change and it ends up being a different color. But if it were inherently existent, whatever one were to do to that object, it wouldn't change. Whatever causes and conditions it were to encounter would have no impact on it. So that's the meaning of inherent existence. And then before I say what Genda said, what he said earlier, and I didn't translate, so in the first line we have this word negated. So this means, this can equally be translated as a change, so it cannot be changed, or it can be translated as cannot be reversed, cannot be turned away from. So I share those different synonyms just to help you get a feeling for what is meant by negated here. So because inherent existence cannot be changed, cannot be turned away from, cannot be reversed. So those would all be synonyms. Now to what Genda just said, because he said that earlier. Now what he said now is, he's read the second line. Because inherent existence cannot be negated, if phenomena possess even the slightest inherent nature. So what these two lines then are leading on to is, as we've been hearing, if a phenomenon is inherently existent, it cannot be changed. There's nothing that can influence it, and therefore it would be unchanging.
Let's look a little more then at the second line, and what the implication or the meaning behind the second line. If phenomena possessed even the slightest inherent nature. So here, it's referring to all phenomena. It's referring to all phenomena. So let's take the person. If the person were inherently existent, that would mean the person is independent and couldn't be affected by anything else at all and would be unchanging. That's the meaning of inherent existence. So when a person is born, the infant is tiny. If that infant were inherently existent, it couldn't change. It couldn't have all the causes and conditions that would otherwise lead it to grow and develop would have no impact on this infant, and throughout its entire life would stay, the body would stay exactly at that same stage, or it wouldn't have development, but at the same size of being an infant. So that would be the phenomena of small. The phenomena that is different to that, let's say an old person. If an old person, if they were inherently existent, the situation of old age would also be unchanging. They wouldn't have changed to and developed to become aged, and nor would they continue to age. They would always be aged, and that's in exactly the same way, because they are independent and unchanging, those two qualities of being inherently existent. Likewise, if the phenomenon that is illness, if that were inherently existent, one would always be ill and always experiencing that illness would always be present and would be unchanging. Therefore, one could not heal. No medication or change in lifestyle could impact illness. And the same would be the case with health. If the phenomenon, that is health, were unchanging, one would not be able to, one would never get ill, and one would not need to take care of one's health because it would be unchanging. Similarly, with the phenomenon that is poverty, or the phenomenon that is wealth, whichever were inherently existent, would be independent. No causes and conditions could impact on that phenomenon. That phenomenon, that is poverty or wealth, would be unchanging. Someone would always be equally wealthy or always equally poor. And similarly, with the phenomenon of the mental state of happiness. If the mental state of happiness were inherently existent, one would always be happy, because that state has the characteristics of being inherent existence, namely unchanging and independent. In other words, no causes and conditions would impact on the mind, on the happy state of mind. One would just always be happy, equally happy. So that those are the consequences of how a phenomenon would exist if it were inherently existent.
Let's look at the third line. It's clear if we read it together. Because inherent existence cannot be negated, if phenomena possessed even the slightest inherent nature, nirvana could not be achieved. So what does this mean now when we're looking at the third line, nirvana could not be achieved? So if phenomena possessed even the slightest inherent nature or inherent existence, then these phenomena would be independent. They wouldn't be affected by anything, any causes and conditions they came into contact with, and they would be unchanging. So that means that if one were to engage in the process of receiving teachings, reflecting on the meaning of those teachings, meditating on those teachings, and even attaining paths of accumulation, the mental path of preparation, the mental path of seeing, this could not then lead to the state of abandoning the afflicted minds, which the path of seeing should lead to. The abandoning of the afflicted minds, and if that can't be done, one couldn't attain nirvana, which is the state of having abandoned the afflicted minds. So this entire sequence of development would be impossible if phenomena existed inherently. Again, why would it be impossible? Because phenomena that exist inherently cannot change. They are unchanging and they are independent, which means they are not affected or impacted, not changed by the causes and conditions they encounter. Which means, through studying, reflecting, and meditating, one would not have an impact on the afflicted minds. They couldn't be reduced in strength, nor could paths be attained, nor could nirvana be attained.
And coming to the fourth line, nirvana could not be achieved, nor fabrications eliminated, you taught. So if phenomena existed inherently, as we've been hearing, this means they would be independent, and they could not change. So this then is being, as the term fabrications here, we can understand here as meaning the phenomena of samsara, or samsaric phenomena. So we can think of our various afflicted minds, as well as the material phenomena around us, such as buildings and the environment. So these, if they were inherently existent, being inherently existent, they would be independent of any impact from causes and conditions, independent of any impact of anything around them, and they would be unchanging. So what that means is that one would not be able to abandon the cause of suffering, in other words, our afflicted minds, and therefore meditation, the process that should lead to the abandonment of the afflicted minds, wouldn't lead to the elimination of the afflictions, wouldn't lead to the elimination of suffering. So all of this would result if phenomena existed inherently.
Meaning then, to summarize the meaning of this verse, is that Buddha Shakyamuni taught that if phenomena existed inherently, they would be unable to change through encountering causes and conditions. Because as we've been hearing, the meaning of inherent existence is that such a phenomenon would be independent of causes and conditions and unchanging. So the implication of this is that no matter how much we meditate, we would not be able to spiritually progress. We would not be able to attain enlightenment, because inherently existent phenomena cannot be impacted on by causes and conditions, and they are unchanging. Therefore, spiritual progression and the elimination of afflictions, the development of good qualities, could not take place. And this isn't only the case in terms of religious activity, but also the work we engage in. No matter how much effort we were to put into our livelihood or into our career, we wouldn't be able to eliminate our problems through that technique either, because the problems and difficulties we experience, being inherently existent, cannot be impacted on by causes and conditions. So therefore, if phenomena existed inherently, one would not be able to spiritually progress, not be able to abandon the afflicted minds, and not be able to attain the state of having abandoned the afflictions, in other words, nirvana. And this is the meaning of the verse, and this was taught by the Buddha himself. So hopefully now the meaning of inherent existence is clear, as well as the fault that would follow if a phenomena did exist inherently. Because if we think of our own experience in this life, we can see that phenomena do change. We have observed directly with ourselves, but also with others, that our children are born, they grow and develop. They do not stay the same. So they are impacted on by causes and conditions. We also have experience that through making effort in skillful techniques, we can reduce the impact of problems and difficulties in our lives. You can transform our lives. And we also see this in the material world around us. If we plant a seed
and we plant it in a nutritious soil, and there's sufficient heat and moisture, we know the plant will grow. And the plant will grow, and perhaps if it's cared for well, become big and strong, maybe in a large tree. And that tree then will will perhaps blossom, perhaps fruit will grow on the tree. And then at some later point, the flowers will wither and die, the fruit will go rotten, and even the tree itself will eventually wither and die. So therefore, based on our own experience, based on our own valid cognition, we can see that phenomena cannot be inherently existent. They cannot be not dependent. They cannot be unchanging. And we know this from our own valid cognition, our own experience. So that furthermore, based on what we have experienced in this world, we can understand as well that our way of thinking can change. And we can intentionally develop our way of thinking, which means through receiving teachings, reflecting, and then meditating on these teachings, we can spiritually progress. We can develop ever more powerful virtuous minds and weaken our non-virtuous minds. And therefore, we can develop powerful meditative minds such as calm abiding and special insights, and use these to attain actual mental paths. And continue our progression to where we actually abandon the afflicted minds together with their seeds, and when abandoned completely, attain the state of liberation, the state that is liberated from suffering, a state where we are liberated from taking uncontrolled rebirth in samsara. That too can be achieved. So based on our own valid cognition, we can see that phenomena do not exist inherently because they are subject to causes and conditions. They are not independent and unchanging. And therefore, spiritual progression and attainment of spiritual goals such as liberation and enlightenment, this is possible. Therefore, no phenomena exists inherently. No phenomena are unchanging, whereas we know from our own experience, phenomena do change. They are dependent arisings. And the easiest example to understand this is if we plant a seed, it will grow. A plant will follow. And that shows that the seed and the plant itself are not independent, but are dependent, or dependent arisings. And this is the case with all phenomena. There is not a single phenomenon that is not a dependent arising or that is inherently existent. And we can come to understand this through hearing the presentation and reflecting on the presentation on dependent arising. And this is the case not just with external phenomena, but also internal phenomena. Our afflicted minds such as anger and attachment and ignorance, these can be reduced in strength and eventually completely abandoned. What does
does that mean? All the sufferings of samsara, whether coarse or subtle, these too can be abandoned through engaging in the skillful technique of receiving teachings, reflecting, and then meditating on these teachings. Nothing is inherently existent. Everything is a dependent arising.
Jayarimpache, in this verse, he's saying to us that the Buddha himself taught. Hence we have this verse in quotation marks and it ends with the term "you taught." Buddha himself taught that if phenomena or any phenomenon were inherently existent, it could not change. And many faults follow from this. So we spoke earlier about the faults that would follow if a phenomenon such as wealth, or a phenomenon such as poverty, or the phenomenon that is the mind of happiness, if these were inherently existent, they could not change. So many faults follow from the would follow if phenomena existed inherently, and the Buddha showed this to us, or presented this to us clearly. Moreover, the Buddha presented how phenomena do exist, and this is as dependent arisings. And then thirdly, what the Buddha also presented is how important it is to understand this, or why it is so important to understand this. Because phenomena are dependent arisings, they can improve and develop. And this knowledge, when one comes to understand it on a deep level, it can be transformative. And because then of the great power and importance of this knowledge of dependent arising and how phenomena lack inherent existence, Jai Rinpoche is praising the Buddha for having taught this. Furthermore, the advice from Jai Rinpoche is that this Buddha has taught us now that all phenomena, without exception, do not exist inherently, but are dependent arisings. So all phenomena, no matter how great or slight, do not exist inherently at all, but are dependent arisings. And so this presentation is something that we need to reflect on repeatedly over a sustained period, and if we do so, this will lead to our own inner development, our spiritual development. Minds such as bodhicitta will grow and develop, our wisdom, understanding, emptiness will grow and develop, and these are the two primary minds required for the attainment of the state of enlightenment.
Then 那就是两个扎马的，这两个扎，第一个来的我们，这个，那我们就靠过来，借过来，你那靠过来，借的，我们用过来的，我今天这里一个东西，第二天，什么大的，啊，这个东西，有啥话的，那搞完这个事呢，东西的来的，你有没有把那东西给丢失？来的，你有没有把那东西给丢失？啊，给丢失什么？但来的你有没有把现在干的事，用过的事呢？你这里讲，你这样，那这边俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，俺是，
I just heard about the importance of reflecting on dependent arising, so let's then talk about how we can think of reflect on dependent arising or utilize this presentation of dependent arising. So we start with a course or an easy meditation to follow. So we think of our body, and so this body sometimes we experience illness. So illness would be amongst the division of suffering into three, the causes form, the suffering of suffering or the suffering of physical and mental pain. And there are other types of suffering such as the suffering of change and this all-pervasive suffering. But if we take an example that's easy to understand, when experiencing the suffering of physical pain, namely illness, then we utilize our knowledge of dependent arising. Is this illness inherently existent, or does it arise in dependence on causes? Of course, it arises in dependence on causes. And what are these causes? So there will be a multitude, but amongst them, that we possess these physical and mental aggregates, because we have these aggregates, these are a cause for having illness. So then we can take the meditation a step deeper. So these aggregates, are they inherently existent, or are they dependent arisings? So if they're dependent arising, do they come about in dependence on causes? Yes. What causes? So we investigate further. The causes that led to the attainment of these physical and mental aggregates are karma that we accumulated through our afflicted minds. Then we take it one step further. So what is the cause of this karma? Well, that's the afflicted minds. What is the cause that led to the afflicted minds? So they have as a root cause the ignorance of self-grasping. So here we can see this sequence of looking at a variety of phenomena to see, are they inherently existent or dependent arising? If they're dependent arising, what causes do they come from? And then look at those causes. And you go through the same sequence, but with a different object. Starting with the illness, to the aggregates, to the causes of the aggregates, contaminated karma, their cause or its cause, afflicted minds, its cause, the ignorance of self-grasping. And that there is the root cause. Because from this ignorance of self-grasping, which is a mind of ignorance that grasps at the self as being self-existent or inherently existent. So from this mind of ignorance that grasps at the self as being self-existent or inherently existent, follow all the other afflicted minds, such as attachments, anger, pride, jealousy, and with these minds we accumulate the karma that leads to us remaining trapped in cyclic existence and having these contaminated aggregates,
which experience illness. So through reflecting on the presentation of dependent arising, we can see how all phenomena are dependent arisings, are not inherently existent, and the root cause of our being bound within cyclic existence is this ignorance of self-grasping.
我的人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中国人生中的中
As has just been said, the root cause of all our suffering is this mind that is the ignorance of self-grasping. So when we come to know this, to understand this, to see this for ourselves, we then need to investigate this mind, whether it is a correct mind, a valid mind, a true mind. So we need to see if it is a correct mind. Maybe that's the best term here. Is it whether it's a correct mind or not? And the way to see whether this mind, whether it is correct or not, is to see, does the object that this mind grasps at or apprehends, does it exist in the way, does that object exist in the way that this mind apprehends it or grasps at it? So this is how we investigate to see if this mind that is called the ignorance of self-grasping is a correct mind or a valid mind. And the way we do that is to look at the object that the mind is grasping at as existing in the way that it appears, and to see whether it does exist in this way. So the object, when we're talking about the ignorance of self-grasping, the object is the self, because that is what is being grasped at or apprehended. So grasp and apprehend are synonyms. Grasped at by this mind of ignorance. So does this self exist in the way that it appears? And as we've heard, all phenomena appear to be inherently existent, which means they appear to be unchanging, not impacted on by anything else at all. So does the self exist in this way? And we go through the meditation like we've heard previously. We investigate whether this inherently existent self can be found. And we look in the physical aggregate and then in the mental aggregates, and we come to the point where we cannot find this I. We've searched everywhere and we cannot find an inherently existent I or an inherently existent self. And we come to just find emptiness. This then leads us to the understanding that the self or the I is empty of inherent existence. But then, does that mean the self doesn't exist at all? How? Because we know we have a sense of self, and we're sitting, we're meditating. So how can it be said the self does exist? It's a dependent arising. So this takes us back to what we've been hearing initially. No phenomena exists inherently, and we found that now with the self. All phenomena that exist are dependent arisings. The self too is a dependent arising. And how so? Merely imputed by mind. So the self is dependent on being merely imputed by mind.
Kunde. Kann man nur Daxi Zunga? Nee, die Tante Lab mir gesehen kommen.
Okay. Dann Rashi Majuba, Jebatin, Rashi Majuba, Tombani Tondu, Tombani Tobaza, Madi, Tondu, Madi, Shenle, Dinu Juba, Hagova, Shenle, Dinu, Masha, Shen, Chashi, Dinu Juba, Lupa, Tawa, Hagova, then I go to the Nagi, Ma, said in Kale Motu, Ramuni, Juba, something you look at. Lo, ne tarbada tamji kim bi gogon yele tobi ge tobi yobadi hagu gore se
So the conclusion then of this meditation, we see that firstly the self or the I is empty of existing inherently. We come to realize it does not exist inherently, but rather the self is dependent on one on the other. So remember, we had these two types of dependency, one on causes and conditions and one dependent one on the other. So the self is dependent on other. And what does that mean? The self is dependent on being merely imputed by mind. So this is where we've come to in the meditation. So we come to know that this mind that is the ignorance of self-grasping, this mind that is an ignorance because it grasps or apprehends the self as existing inherently, which is not how it exists, this mind is a wrong consciousness. Or we can say that this mind, this ignorance, is mistaken, it is faulty, it is a wrong consciousness. And being a wrong consciousness, we can eliminate it through developing the contrary mind, the wisdom realizing emptiness. So through developing the opposite mind, the contrary mind, the wisdom realizing emptiness, this mind that is ignorance of self-grasping and the root cause of all our suffering, it can be abandoned. And if the root cause of all our suffering can be abandoned, liberation from suffering can be attained.
Mio ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、ちょっと、 那就先这样，讲把它叫我修车主呀，他上那么多修车主呀，他，哎，讲修身体的，那样修车主呀，修车主对的呢，人家们的的，你把修车主的，现在的那样子，这电力的那么些上班，东西多坏的，业绩不修了，啥子，那的送过来的。
When we have been engaging in this meditation repeatedly over a sustained period, we come to see that again and again that the self is empty of inherent existence. And when we know this, we know that the cause of all our suffering can be eliminated. So this, of course, leads to great strength of mind within ourselves and great joy within us, knowing that the cause of all our suffering can be eliminated. We know the technique and we have experience of applying this technique. Moreover, this understanding or this realization that we now have in relation to ourselves, we can apply it to the situation others find themselves in. Because this ignorance of self-grasping, that is the root cause of all the suffering that we experience, is also the root cause of all the suffering that all sentient beings experience. So we take this realization in relation to ourselves and we apply it to the situation others find themselves in. Because our root cause of suffering is not limited to us as an individual, but is shared by all suffering sentient beings. And seeing how sentient beings are suffering due to being under the control of this ignorance of self-grasping, and how the vast majority of them haven't even realized the variety and subtlety of sufferings that they experience, let alone have any ideas to the root cause of this. Compassion arises within us for the suffering that beings are experiencing, as well as the situation that they find themselves in. So compassion again has the meaning of the strong wish for beings to be freed of suffering. And now we have a clear understanding of why they are suffering. So therefore, the wisdom realizing emptiness also leads to the generation of forceful, powerful compassion within us. And this, again, just to emphasize this relationship between emptiness, or the wisdom realizing emptiness, and the minds of compassion. When one realizes emptiness, one comes to see that it is possible to eliminate the cause of all the suffering that we experience. And from this great strength of mind comes to us, because this knowledge is no longer intellectual, but is experiential. Then we apply this to the situation that others find themselves in, and equally, or once again, a great strength of mind comes. Strong love, strong compassion arises for others, and much easier than without the realization of emptiness, the mind of special intention will come. Because the mind of special intention is the mind that follows the arisal of love and compassion. It is the mind that takes responsibility for others being freed of suffering and experiencing lasting happiness. So when one, based on not just knowledge, but on experience, sees that liberation from suffering is possible through the elimination of the cause of suffering through the wisdom realizing emptiness,
through the power of mind that comes from this experience. That then leads to this mind or special intention arising in an intense, in an overwhelming way. So therefore, through meditating on dependence arising, come to realize emptiness, and this leads to powerful minds of love, compassion, an overwhelming special intention, and therefore bodhicitta arising within us. And with these minds, the power of mind that comes from realizing emptiness, and then the power of mind that comes from bodhicitta, we will effortlessly make a great effort in our practice. We will easily overcome whatever obstacles there are to develop spiritually.
What we're hearing here in terms of the benefits of meditating on dependence arising, this is something that we will have experience of in other walks of life. So whatever we are embarking on, if we first see the benefit that comes of a benefit that will come from achieving something, great interest will arise. And if we see that this benefit is of great importance, then the interest we will have in achieving that will be that much more powerful. Moreover, if we come to understand the technique that makes it possible to achieve whatever in life we wish for, then the intensity with which we'll want to achieve this and the effort we'll make will be that much more powerful. And moreover, whatever we're engaging in life, when we have experience of progressing towards achieving this desired goal, then the effort we put into that will be ever greater. So this is why Jai Rinpoche is giving us the advice that he is in this verse he composed. He's advising us that Buddha Shakyamuni taught based on both knowledge and experience, and if we practice in the same way that he did, we too will achieve the same results as he did. So through meditating on the presentation of dependence arising, tremendous benefit comes for both ourselves and others. And Jai Rinpoche is presenting this now to encourage us to do so, encouraging us to reflect repeatedly over a sustained period on the presentation of dependence arising, and thereby come to understand that all phenomena are empty of inherent existence, that phenomena exist only as dependent arisings. And this not only leads to the elimination of our own suffering, but also to intense minds of love and compassion and bodhicitta arising within us. And then thirdly, leads to great strength of mind, joyous perseverance in terms of engaging in our own practice. So it's for these reasons that Lama Tsongkhapa is encouraging us to engage in this practice.
Yes.
And further meaning behind why Jai Rinpoche is composed this verse and composed this text is he's encouraging us
for many reasons to reflect on dependence arising. So we've heard now about the great benefits that will come in terms of the elimination of our own suffering through coming to understand dependence arising, and thereby be able to destroy the root cause of our suffering. And moreover, that will secondly lead to the rise of powerful and intense bodhicitta. And then thirdly, that these two minds also then result in us having making a great effort in our own practice. So these are three results that do come from reflecting, receiving teachings on and reflecting on dependence arising. But moreover, going through this process of receiving teachings, studying them, and reflecting and meditating on them, serves to have a great impact on every walk of our lives. So for example, our lives, unfortunately, do experience many problems and difficulties. And our understanding of dependence arising can help us deal very effectively with these problems and help us transform the difficulties we experience in our life. So for example, if one has a particular a goal, perhaps it's a project at work or it's some other goal that one has in life, then one makes, to achieve this, one needs to make some efforts, gather together perhaps some knowledge or some skills. Whatever one needs to do to achieve this goal, one tries to do this. But in that process of trying to achieve this desired goal, one may have many expenses. One may experience a lot of problems from others, people discouraging you or criticizing you, or the various stages to the attainment of that goal. They may not be being achieved. It may be difficult. And then from all of this, what do we tend to do? We worry. Our mind over-conceptualizes. It dominates us. And wherever we go, whatever we're doing, this is going around in the back of our mind. And we are unhappy. But if we were then to take our understanding of dependence arising and apply it to this situation, the way we relate to it will change. Because we'll understand that this goal we are striving for is a dependence arising. It is not inherently existent, which means it will be achieved in dependence on the accumulation of the required causes and conditions. And those causes and conditions we are trying to accumulate now, but they are also dependent on our past life effort. And perhaps this goal cannot be achieved now because we haven't accumulated the right causes in our past life. So this then can serve us, depending on the situation, to either say, this is not going to happen, I can set it aside and feel no disappointment because this is just the reality of the situation. Or us to think, well, let me continue to accumulate causes and see if I achieve it. But without the worry and the anxiety, because we'll know the achievement of the goal is dependent on causes and conditions. And one of those causes isn't worrying about it. But seriously, this situation here is how it exists in reality. Achievement of a goal doesn't just come about. It comes about in dependence on causes and conditions. Similarly, something else that causes us a lot of mental anguish is suffering that comes from illness. When we experience illness, especially severe illness, this tends to have a great impact on our mind, especially when we relate to it in a way as if it were inherently existent, meaning unchanging. Meaning, we will always experience this inherently existent illness. That leads to feelings of hopelessness and frustration and anger. But if we apply our understanding to this phenomenon, this object that is illness, we will see there's no inherent nature that can be found. Rather, it is a dependence arising. And therefore, this illness will come to an end, and we can try through following or seeking medical advice, following the medical advice, we can try to accumulate the causes to eliminate this illness. But perhaps due to the strength of the causes that have now ripened, these causes that we have accumulated in the past, perhaps there's nothing that can be done about this illness. And in such a case, our understanding of dependency leads us
to an acceptance of the situation. And that means our mind is not over-conceptualizing. It's not becoming obsessed with our situation. Our mind is able to become a more spacious. And then we can accept the situation and we can move forward without anguish. Doesn't mean we like this situation or we're happy that you have it, but we accept it. This is just how it is. In reality, people get sick, and sometimes we can accumulate the causes to heal. Sometimes the ripening causes that led to the illness are complete, and the illness will lead to the end of our life. In this way, we can accept the situation and not experience mental anguish. Then a third illustration, another situation where we do experience a lot of problems is in our relations with others, whether they are with our children or with our loved ones in general or with work colleagues or friends. If we, let's take an illustration of where we're trying to help someone and we feel that they're just taking us for granted, it's expected, and they just always rely on us, always call on us, and never show any gratitude. It perhaps appears as if they're taking advantage of us. This ends up leading us feeling used and abused. And this leads to our mind becoming closed and angry. So here again, in these and other situations, we can utilize our understanding of dependent arising, seeing that this the object, this person's behavior, it's not inherently existent, it's a dependent arising. They are acting under the influence of their own afflicted minds. And it's their own afflicted minds that is leading them to act in a way that appears to us as being taking us for granted, taking advantage of us. So this then leads to us understanding that they are suffering under the influence of afflictions. Compassion arises within them. We can also use our knowledge of dependent arising to look at our own minds, our own experience of the mind of being taken advantage of, our own experience of the mind of feeling taken advantage of or taken for granted. And we can see that this too doesn't exist inherently, but is a dependent arising. So in all these situations, we can use our knowledge of dependent arising, our knowledge that we have cultivated in meditation, and come to make our mind more open and more spacious, not grasping at the object, at our experience, as being inherently existent, as being something that's unchanging and will always be there, but understand the situation more in accordance with reality.
I didn't know that. I didn't know. I want to say Sabbath. Yes, I see. I'm just saying, thinking that you can do keep it for lesson. You did love to come on news.
And this brings us then to the 17th verse. Who could possibly argue with you when, with a lion like roar, you taught so often and so well to assemblages of sages that, therefore, everything is totally free of inherent existence. Just first to say, the order of the English and the Tibetan is very different. So we're starting with the fourth line. Therefore, everything is totally free of inherent existence.
The word therefore, this then shows a reason. And the meaning here is that there are many reasons that harm the view that phenomena exist inherently. Therefore, everything is totally free of inherent existence. This is established through many reasons, many logical reasons. So through reflecting on, coming to understand and reflecting on the presentation of dependent arising, this is how we come to see that all phenomena, without exception, do not exist inherently, are empty of inherent existence. They do not exist inherently, even in the slightest way. They are completely empty of inherent existence. And this understanding that comes about through reflecting on the presentation of dependent arising, this is a valid way of thinking, a correct way of thinking. So no phenomena exists inherently. Rather, all existence or phenomena exist as dependent arisings.
Looking at the verse, the second line, with a lion-like roar you taught so often and so well. What the Buddha then taught so often and so well was that all phenomena are empty of dependent arising. No phenomenon is inherently existent at all. So everything that exists lacks inherent existence, but is a dependent arising. And the Buddha taught this with a lion-like roar, meaning that it taught this with the confidence and the authority, the distinction of a lion. So this refers to the way that he taught. And he could teach in this way because he was doing so independent on both knowledge and experience. Therefore, he taught with great confidence and authority. And he did so repeatedly.
So looking now at this second and third line together, when with a lion-like roar you taught so often and so well to assemblages of sages. So here, what is being said is that the Buddha, he didn't give this teaching on dependent arising to just a select few, but he taught it repeatedly and to large groups, to many, many different people. And those that he taught to have been called here, so there are different ways to translate this. So here it's sages, but you can call them those who are wise. It refers to those who have intelligence. In this context, it refers to those who have intelligence, or those who are intelligent, rather. Those who are intelligent. So Buddha taught repeatedly or often to those who are intelligent, taught them the presentation of dependence arising and that phenomena lack inherent existence. And moreover, he taught well. And the term here, well, then, behind it, has the meaning that he taught them in a way that is unmistaken, faultless, and without anything added that is not needed. He taught them all the various stages and the sequence and the progression, how to identify what is meant by suffering, then the causes of suffering, how and that suffering can be eliminated, and how to do so. So all these various stages were taught in the correct sequence, completely, unmistakenly. And that's what's meant by well, and he did so broadly, he did so broadly and often.
And what's for us is the first line, who could possibly argue with you? So we've heard that the Buddha taught dependent arising. He did so widely and he did so repeatedly. So with amongst these many beings who were exposed to the Buddha's teaching on dependent arising, who amongst them could legitimately point out faults in the Buddha's teaching? Who could legitimately criticize the Buddha's teaching in the sense of pointing out faults in the Buddha's teaching? No one could do that. So that's the meaning of what for us is the first line.
The meaning then of this verse in brief is that the Buddha taught repeatedly and widely and to an audience of those who are intelligent that all phenomena without exception are dependent arisings, dependent on causes and conditions, dependent on one on the other. Moreover, or secondly, no phenomenon exists inherently at all. So this is what the Buddha taught widely and widely and repeatedly and to an audience of those who are intelligent. And amongst this large audience that heard these teachings, there were none who could legitimately or validly, there were none who could point out valid faults in this presentation of dependent arising. The advice from Jerempishe within this verse is that, once again, the reason for all phenomena, or first of all phenomena are empty of inherent existence. But this isn't something that the Buddha merely stated. He presented logical reasons that show this or prove this, namely that phenomena are dependent arisings. Nothing exists inherently, but are rather dependent arisings. And he taught this broadly and to those who are intelligent, and none of them could criticize and point out valid faults within this presentation. And that is because this presentation on dependent arising is in accordance with reality. So hearing this, so this is being presented to us so that we can have respect in the teacher and his teaching, faith, trust, conviction in the teacher and his teaching. And why do we need to have those minds? It's because those minds lead us to make great effort in receiving the teachings and reflecting on the teachings. And moreover, as we've been hearing, tremendous benefit comes to ourselves through reflecting on dependent arising, in terms of the happiness that we experience in this life and, of course, in future lives, as well as the reduction of the suffering we experience in this life, and eventually in future lives, the complete elimination of suffering. And moreover, as we heard earlier, tremendous benefit comes to others as well, through our reflection on the presentation on dependent arising. So all this is being presented so that we can generate strong trust and confidence and powerful faith, faith that is based on both knowledge and experience. And with this, we will make ever greater efforts in coming to understand and realize the presentation on dependent arising.
to summarize then what we've looked at this morning, Jay Rinpoche here in composing this text and what he's saying in these verses is that Buddha Shakyamuni taught us, based on both knowledge and experience, the correct and complete and unmistaken path for the attainment of enlightenment. And this wasn't just something that the Buddha heard, but it's something that he put into practice and attained the full result. And that I, Jay Rinpoche, too, have taken this teaching of the Buddha and am putting it into practice. And I, too, am achieving the results of this practice. So therefore, I encourage you, as my students, to do exactly the same as our founder, teacher, Buddha Shakyamuni, and me, your teacher, Lama Tsongkhapa, have done. Receive these teachings and reflect on them repeatedly over a sustained period. Because you now have the opportunity to do this. Utilize this opportunity, utilize this life you have well, and do so by living a life similar to what I, the composer of this text, as well as Buddha Shakyamuni did. And as we've heard presented last night as well as this morning, use this presentation on dependent arising to reflect on the kindness that others have shown us. And do so to the point where a wish to repay the kindness arises. When we see the direct and indirect kindness that all beings show us in this life as well as in previous lives, the wish to repay that kindness will arise. And then take that wish and develop it further, wanting others to experience happiness, wanting others to be completely freed of suffering, so the minds of love and compassion. Then understanding that through our own meditation, our own realization of the presentation on dependent arising, that this is the method for eliminating suffering completely, because it is the method for eliminating the root cause of all our suffering, that will give rise to a powerful mind of both joy and wish to make great effort. And with this mind wanting to make great effort, this will have an impact on our love and compassion. It will lead us to sincerely generate the mind of special insight, the mind that takes responsibility for the welfare of others. We will know that it is possible to attain liberation and enlightenment ourselves, as well as being possible to become the most skilled of guides to lead others to a state free of suffering. So in this way, through the meditation on dependent arising, great benefit comes to us in this and future lives in terms of the elimination of suffering, as well as great benefit to ourselves and others through the generation of the mind of bodhicitta. And through meditating on dependent arising, the attainment of goals such as Buddhahood come about so much more quickly, because this presentation on dependent arising leads to great strength of mind in both our wish to understand or realize wisdom, realize the wisdom realizing emptiness, as well as great strength of mind in relation to our love and our compassion. And then lastly, having generated bodhicitta, we think about the various multitude of causes that one needs to engage in order to achieve the result that is Buddhahood. And these are the six perfections. And one then meditates on the perfections of generosity and ethical conduct and patience, joyous perseverance, concentration, and of course, sixthly, wisdom. So these are the reasons why Jay Rinpoche is presenting this here, and he's encouraging us to use this opportunity to practice in the same way that he did. Okay. So we'll conclude the new presentation on new material. Before you have the opportunity to ask questions, just to answer Alan's question from last night. So, I just now from my side, I went to my room last night, listened to what Genla had to say, didn't understand it, emailed another translator, got a reply overnight, and now that's what I'll read you. So anyway, the forward pervasion, if it is a dependent arising, it is necessarily not inherently existent. Oh no, wait, that.
I'm reading you the wrong one. I have her translation of mine. I was reading mine. I'm not going to read you mine. Anyway, forward pervasion. If it is a dependent arising, it is necessarily, inherently not existent. Okay? If it is a dependent arising, it is necessarily, inherently not existent. Reverse pervasion. We don't get it all up. SMS the to you too. Reverse pervasion, if it is a dependent arising, it is necessarily not inherently existent. So the forward and reverse pervasion, the first two-thirds are the same. If it is a dependent arising, it is necessarily. And then the unique part for the forward pervasion, inherently not existent. And the unique part for the reverse pervasion, not inherently existent. Okay, so that's the translation I got. I hope it's clear to you. But if you didn't get it all that, to me neither. But anyway, like that. I don't understand how to translate these two different negations. So therefore I can't translate it. To me, they kind of say the same thing, but they of course don't.